Thank you, Paula, for reading our gospel for us this morning. When we talk about resurrection, we can't help but use words like wonderfully mysterious, beloved bewilderment, incredibly inspiring, supernatural, by which I mean just really, really natural, divinely human, and humanly divine, possible, and yet implausible. But even as I was working on this message, it occurred to me that any one of these terms, correct that, all of these terms both supersede and fail to fully capture what resurrection means. Now, for centuries, scholars and students and Sunday school teachers, spiritual seekers, even skeptics have scoured the Gospels for all the truth that they can find to prove that resurrection is or isn't a reality. But fact and fiction can be strange bedfellows, especially in a first century context. For example, if you read Matthew's gospel, as we did this morning, there are two Marys who came to the tomb, one being Magdalene, not a prostitute, by the way, and the other unnamed except for Mary. There's an earthquake. An angel descends and rolls back the stone. Frightens the guards watching the tomb and tells the Marys, don't be afraid, and that Jesus will greet them in Galilee. However, Jesus then appears to the Marys almost immediately, it seems, repeating what the angel just told them. And they take hold of his feet and they worship him. But if we were to compare Matthew's depiction of the resurrection with John's story, we get a different scenario. In John's telling, there is only one Mary, and that's Mary Magdalene, still not a prostitute. And she arrives at the tomb alone to find that the stone has already been rolled away. Now, distraught, Mary returns to tell Simon and Peter, the beloved, or Simon Peter and the beloved disciple, that what she's discovered at the tomb. So the two disciples run to the tomb to confirm Mary's report. They go into the tomb and they find Jesus' grave clothes laying there. Now, after the disciples have left, Mary, overcome by emotion and blinded by her tears, fails to recognize Jesus standing in front of her until he speaks her name. And Mary reaches out, but she is told not to touch him. So, one Mary or two? Earthquake or no? Angel or no angel, stone rolled away, stone still intact. Disciples or no disciples, touching or not touching. You see, the problem is, let me just get off the screen. The problem is the resurrection stories weren't written to be accurate or even true. at least as far as being factual is concerned. And while each tell of the same event, at the same time, each story is unique and really can't be harmonized without somehow depleting all of them. But these stories weren't chronicled for posterity or stored in whatever first century version of the cloud was, or even written in detail about that day. These stories were told and retold out of love and compassion, death and loss, fear and hope, from the heart more than the head, about how this man, this Jesus, turned their entire world upside down. It's impossible for us to fully comprehend the physical and mental responses of Mary Magdalene and the disciples upon this shocking revelation that Jesus was alive. But we can try to consider their emotional responses just a bit. Now, if you've ever had a loved one or someone close to you die, then you know how it feels to long to see them again. You know how it feels to long to hear their voice. You know how it feels to yearn for just a few more minutes together. So was Peter overcome with grief and despair over his denial about knowing Jesus? Did Thomas the twin wish they had done more to stop this from happening? Was Mary Magdalene tragically heartbroken, losing this man whom she loved so much? Was John distraught, wondering if he ever loved Jesus enough? Now imagine their grief, suddenly teased with the possibility that he was still alive. Imagine the emotional whiplash created by this strange turn of events. Imagine the trauma of watching Jesus brutally tortured, bloody and in excruciating pain, only to encounter angels with the news that he is risen from the grave. It's a known concept that after someone dies, it's not abnormal for us to see or hear them. Some report even sensing someone's smell or their warmth or even a very strong feeling of their presence. You see, when someone dies, it can take a while for our brains to process what has happened and for the finality of it to sink in. In fact, you're even more likely to see or hear the deceased if someone's death was particularly traumatic, as Jesus' death surely was. So did they see Jesus? Or did they receive a new way of seeing Jesus in the world they were a part of? Or in the days that follow the crucifixion, did they begin to see him everywhere and in everything? According to Peter Enns, who teaches at Eastern University, the notion of resurrection wasn't new to first century Jews. Many of them believed that one day in the future, God would raise them all from the dead and reward them for being faithful. But Enns calls the resurrection an unexpected twist, because rather than raising all the faithful Jews one day in the future, the early followers of Jesus claimed that God had pulled a fast one and raised one Jew. And just a note, Matthew writes in his gospel that at the point of Jesus' death, many bodies came out of the tombs and walked around Jerusalem. But the other Gospels don't even mention it. Why do you think that is? Sharon Baker, who teaches at Messiah College, writes that Paul and the other New Testament writers interpret the saving life, death, and resurrection of Christ in ways that their own communities could understand through figurative language and metaphorical phrases and stories. She continues that the resurrection is a metaphor for God reconciling and restoring our relationship with God in our humanness. But at the same time, it's our participation in God's divinity, illustrating the beauty of reconciliation and restoration with God. So for Baker, what resurrection represents is atonement, a theological term that gets thrown around a lot. But as some of you may be aware, atonement is often broken up, making at-one-ment, the notion of our connection to God through Jesus. Therein, God's heart becomes one with our hearts. God's purposes influence our purposes. And God's vision of the kingdom is offered to us to live out in our world. It shows us that through the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus, a real change takes place in the human-God relationship. It took a while, but eventually the early followers of Jesus began to put the pieces together, recognizing that resurrection wasn't a future thing or part of some world to come. The risen Jesus meant that the world to come was already here. In his letter to the Colossians, Paul insists it's not just Jesus who is raised, but we who are raised with Christ. Or I might say that as Jesus is resurrected, we too are resurrected in him. Here's what Paul writes. He says, "For you have died, and your life is hidden with Christ in God." But he wasn't talking about dead people. He was talking to living people about a resurrection that they could claim as their own and experience the life-changing event that is resurrection. Peter Rollins, in his book, The Idolatry of God, writes that because the miracle of resurrection takes place at a radically subjective level that cannot be objectified or analyzed, it is not, strictly speaking, something that is believed in. Indeed, he continues, it can easily be lived out and not believed. But the evidence of such a miracle is in the way in which it transforms the individual's inner world, changing the entire trajectory of that person's life in a positive, healing way. What we call this miracle, if we even wish to baptize it with a name, is irrelevant. What matters is the transformation that it produces. Jesus scholar Marcus Borg used to say of the more miraculous stories in the Bible, "I don't know if it happened just this way, but I believe it to be true." Resurrection isn't something that happens out there. It's not an event that took place in history. It's something that happens here in the heart. It's an awareness that we have been marked by a life-giving event that invites us to passionately respond with our entire being. It's a certainty that something has happened, A word has taken root within us and brought out overabundant life. And it's an opportunity for us to declare, He is risen, but also we are risen with Him indeed.